Hello, hello, good morning, and welcome to another episode of The Grill, Final Cut Grill number 116, good grief. So if you don't know yet, I have been really getting into this thing called Meerkat. And if you don't know about Meerkat, you're not following me on Twitter, because every time you engage with the Meerkat, it tweets that Fenwick is playing with the Meerkat thing again. So Meerkat is a social broadcasting tool. A personal social broadcasting tool. And I don't think we really know what it is yet. Right now, it's just fun. But as is the case with a lot of technology, a lot of times we build something and kind of field of dreams, like if we build it, they will come. Maybe we don't know what it's going to be, but this idea of personal social broadcasting, which is what I'm calling it. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody else say that. It's interesting, to say the least. Last night I was on the Meerkat, and I'm scrolling through various feeds, and I go, oh, here, this looks interesting. And I started listening to this guy, and one thing leads to another. He's answering questions on his thing, and he mentioned something about video and film production. And I'm like, oh, really? So I, on the Meerkat, you can tweet or chat with somebody. And I said, what edit software do you use? And he responds back with Final Cut Pro, and I'm assuming he's going to say, you know, the old Final Cut Pro, but he says, yeah, and I really like the new Final Cut Pro. So I was like, sold, want to chat with you. So I contacted Ray Brown, and I find out a whole bunch of extra stuff about his background and his family and his experiences in the music industry at, you know, some pretty high levels. And then we talked quite a bit about Final Cut and how he uses it and his love of the app. And I will warn you, the last 10 minutes or so of this interview, if you could care less about Meerkat, you might want to just sign off. But we go into a long discussion, I don't know, 10, 15 minute discussion about Meerkat, what it is, how people are using it. And I will warn you that I give away what I believe is $1 million business plan, at least, in that last 15 minutes. So even if you think I'm nuts, you are going to want to listen to that, because somebody's going to do it. I'm telling you right now, somebody will do this and somebody will make a lot of money. The question is just going, is it going to be you or somebody else? So, cause I think it's an idea that is I'm stealing from multiple people and melding it into one thing. So that's Meerkat. I want to thank the people at Premium Beat. You're going to hear a few music drops in this interview. I won't give it away yet. Those are not Premium Beat teases. Those are actually off of iTunes. That'll make much more sense. But I got to tell you, I love Premium Beat. I just finished a piece for one of our clients this week, and every cut of music we auditioned came from Premium Beat. And if you were watching on, I believe it was Thursday afternoon, maybe it was Friday morning, I can't remember now, you would have been privy to me giving a Meerkat demo of one of my music swap out tricks that I do all the time. So Premium Beat is a curated group of music. That you don't just send them your crap. They ask you to participate. You can buy the songs. You can buy loops. You can buy shorts. The licensing is wicked easy. The music is awesome. And as an editor, I appreciate the type of music, because it's solid and compelling, but it doesn't get in the way of the message that I am slipping that music underneath. So please go check out premiumbeat.com. They have been very gracious to support us. They are also helping us get to, Alex and I get to the Las Vegas town, because next week, I can say that now, next week is NAB, and I will be at the FCP Works booth the whole week, broadcasting live Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday with a whole bevy of guests. And if you want to find out more about that, or you want to come and sit in on the live studio audience, please go to fcpworks.com/NAB2015, or there's a button at the top of the page, fcpworks.com page, if you can't remember that extra seven characters. So we will now join our interview with Ray Brown. He's down there, I believe, in Los Angeles or San Diego, I think, today. And I hope you enjoy this chat about Final Cut 10 and that little yellow meerkat. Is he there?
Chris, hey, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. It's a pleasure to hear your voice in my headphones as opposed to over my phone in the middle of the night last night.
I hope I didn't keep you up too late.
Oh, no, it was fine. It was a pleasure to hear you talk. You're very a very level-headed, entertaining guy, very peaceful. It was a nice chat. Thank you for participating in the meerkat world.
Oh, it's my pleasure. You know, I'm just kind of new to it. Spent, I guess, the last 4 or 5 days deciding that I would participate, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You know, this show, we're going to get to talking about Final Cut, and I was just listening and kind of reading your bio and hearing you talk about, you know, living in Europe and music and all that, and then you mentioned something about, you know, making commercials and getting involved, you know, in about, I think you said about 2001. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, what's he going to, you know, yep, it's probably another one of those premier guys. And then you go, and then I asked you on the Meerkat stream, I'm like, so what's your edit platform of choice? And he goes, well, you know, I'm a Final Cut guy, and I'm just waiting for the, but when they screwed it up, I went to Premiere, and then you go, but I really like 10, and I'm like, score, you're going to be on the show.
Yeah, man, I you know, at 10, I understand why, you know, there were people that were kind of negative about it initially. I understood that based on, you know, these teams that work together and try to do things, you know, collectively. Yeah. I've been in those kind of situations, but I think 10 is an awesome product. I think it got a bad rap early, but I think it did. People turned it around.
It did. Well, I want to hear more about you. So in the stream last night, you very publicly said that you had been a musician. Mm-hmm. So what kind of music did you play?
Well, let's see.
And you know what? And to be fair, I don't think you want to ever use past tense when you say I had been a musician. I think once a musician, you're always a musician, whether you're getting paid for it or not. But
well, I surprise myself each time I get in front of a piano and start touching it and actually start playing. I say, oh, wow, this is still part of me. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. I started music at a very young age when I was a kid. My father's is a top musician. He was in a band that was pretty successful internationally. He started me off with drums, and then I progressed from drums to various instruments growing up. Keyboards, piano was my last instrument. And I found out that I could actually make money with it, so I stuck with that. And I guess the kind of music that I was pretty much into at the time was R&B and funk music. Uh-huh. And I come from a kind of mid-70s going into 80s background. So George Clinton to Stevie Wonder to anything related to that, I just wanted to mimic, really.
Right.
So that was my background for the most part.
Do you think starting as a drummer laid a foundation for any instrument? I mean, piano, let's face it, piano is a percussion instrument. It's definitely rhythm-based, but do you think that helped you in the other instruments that you played?
Absolutely, no question about it. Yeah. You sound like a musician asking some of these questions.
Well, no, I'll tell you, I'm not a musician. I grew up in a family with musicians, but I feel that my music background, and it's really just more of a passion, mm-hmm. Definitely helps as an editor, and that leads me to the next question. Do you think that rhythm background helps you in telling stories and editing?
Absolutely.
I was leading the witness there, by the way.
You were doing quite well at that, by the way. No, I definitely editing, especially when you're for me, the rhythm and even the music connecting with the beat, you know, four on the ground or what have you, four on the floor type of style, mm-hmm. I would generally edit based on what the music would make me feel initially, even before. I know some people do it in the reverse aspect of it. They do the editing across the board.
I'm shocked that people do that. I'm shocked that people just like look at it and go, I need to see this shot for that long, and then we'll deal with the music later. It's like, really? I mean, I'd rather just You know, I tell you an interesting little side story. It was about 8 years ago or something. We were doing a piece for somebody. I can't remember who it was. And I do a lot of, you know, really boring corporate stuff that nobody wants to see or talk about. But we were doing something, and the producer, who is a drummer, by the way, he did not have his music cut picked out. But he said, I'll tell you what, can you just – and we were both sort of just kind of screwing around with like GarageBand or something. And he goes, uh-huh. Let's just pull out a beat in GarageBand and we'll cut to that. We'll find something later. And I'm like, okay. And so we found a loop in GarageBand and we pulled it out. And it was only about a 90-second piece or something. And as it turned out, after spending 2 days cutting this thing, we loved it with just the repetitive little loop out of GarageBand. And he's like, yeah, we're keeping that.
it works, you know?
Sometimes it does, yeah.
Music just brings it all together, really.
And you know, it's also interesting how because a lot of times I'm editing with people that are not as passionate about the music because they have a corporate messaging agenda, and they're like, "Well, I want to move that," and I'm like, "No, you really can't. It kind of needs to be there." I don't understand. I know you don't, but that's why I'm here. You know,
absolutely. Yeah, you know, I think I guess the corporate aspect of things, if they would just kind of allow us creative people to really, you know, kind of hone in and kind of push a little bit more on the creative aspect of it, they might have people more entertained, at least watching these corporate videos. I did a couple of them back in the day using Final Cut. Or actually, no, like you were saying before, I actually started with iMovie.
Right.
That was the first jump into Final Cut. And then I got onto a project in Europe. A funny story, I'll make it short. It was a project, it just landed in my lap. They said, look, it looks like you can shoot, make commercials very well. Would you like to do our commercial for a clothing line? I was like, yeah, sure. Knowing that I had never done it before, ever. But I took the gig. And
I can do that, no problem.
Yeah, no problem. I can do this.
Google.
No sweat. And I started using iMovie, and I realized, oh my goodness, I cannot do this with iMovie. It's just not going to be possible. I needed some more strength with it. So that's where Final Cut came into play, and it saved me.
Yeah, you know, definitely iMovie is a gateway drug to the rest of the tool set, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It was iMovie's like I guess they, you know, they've progressed to make it more and more like Final Cut Pro X now, it seems to me. But Final Cut Pro X just has some outstanding ways of being able to really manipulate your video and in a style that can be easily for somebody to understand and remember and work with, especially if you're just a single individual trying to make great product.
Now, you've mentioned that. I'm going to use your words against you or with you here. You said a single individual. You've said that a couple of times already just in the last 5 minutes. What you're referring to, and I want to be clear about this because this, I think, is a really important thing to wrap your head around. As somebody, and I'm assuming, you know, a lot of people that listen to this podcast are, you know, frankly, a lot of them are joining us on Meerkat right now, which I'm actually Meerkasting.
Oh, right on.
My end of it, which is something I've been doing for the last couple of weeks.
Very
but
cool.
A lot of people look at it as a soloist's tool. Like if you're a lone wolf and you're just doing it on your own, you're fine. One of the things that I'm always trying to promote is the fact that although not advertised, there are many workflows and techniques that you can do where you can share responsibilities and assets and stuff in a work group environment. And in our business, you know, we have 4 edit suites, 5 depending on how you count. And actually, some people may only call it 3, but we call it 4.5. and we share assets all the time, and we share responsibilities on things all the time. So there are ways to do that. And I just want to make sure that when you say, you know, working on your own, that yes, that is the way you work, but as a show, we are not saying that this is a tool for an individual. It works great for an individual, and I have some questions about that for you in a minute.
Absolutely.
But I just want to make sure that everybody understands. And there's guys here on the stream, like Ben from not Central Illinois, who, you know, deals with it in an environment where they have like 15 people all using Final Cut, and he's been on another episode. I think that's cool. So after your music, and again, not after your music career, but at a certain point, you decided you moved to Europe. How did that come about?
A good friend of mine used to follow me around when he was in the country to different gigs that I was performing at. And he was telling me about Hungary. He said that he was there for the last 6 months. He says he loves it. He saw I was getting burnt out in the music side of things. He says, look, why don't you come out and at least hang out with me for a bit? So I thought about it, and I knew I wanted to live in Europe after traveling there so often and living in Budapest or Hungary. I thought I'd never been there before. Let me try that. So about 6 months after that, I kind of got away from the band and kind of square everything away, and I just decided to just bounce over. So I got into Europe about 2001, like right after 9/11. I thought I was going to stay there for like 3 or 4 weeks generally. You know, the first time around, I ended up staying 3 months. Fell in love with the place. I mean,
that's funny. That's funny.
And then with that, I wanted to get away from the audio side. I thought I wanted to do audio initially, but I was so blown away by how beautiful it was there and how no one knew about it, like at least from where we're from, you know, from the US or Los Angeles for that matter, that I just decided I wanted to visually capture it. So I brought a camera. I bought one of those, I think it was a XL, Sony XL1. What was that called? That camera?
I don't know.
Mini DV?
I'm not really into the whole camera thing.
Okay. And anyways, XL1 or something like that. Sorry, Sony, if I'm jacking that name up.
Whatever.
Able to use that in iMovie to kind of document everything. And I kept constantly documenting and capturing it, and eventually started producing shows around it. And with that, I was able to kind of work with the local networks within the area. And I said, look, let me at least put some of these shows up on your dead time, you know, and just making deals like that. They just kind of took me on that. And that kind of led into me kind of, I didn't start in Budapest. I was actually 200 kilometers outside of Budapest, a little small town called Kaposvár. I was messing that name up back then as well. I couldn't pronounce any of the words that they have in Hungary. But then I went into Budapest, and that's when I was able to lock down some serious gigs using our product, Final Cut Pro.
Right. Well, very cool. And then last night you were saying that on occasion you will come back to the States periods of time.
Yeah, that is true. What would happen is I would run out of money. And I would come straight back to California. The first time I came back, it was after I did the project with the commercial project. It was about a year after that. I came back. I didn't have any money. I said, "Oh man, how am I gonna hustle some money here?" So I decided to put a Craigslist ad in. A friend of mine was telling me about Craigslist. wasn't familiar with it,
right.
And they said, "Why don't you put an ad in there about doing whatever you do?" And I said, "Well, what do I do good?" He says, "Well, I know Final Cut Pro now, so let me just start teaching that." So I just put an ad in and just started kind of teaching Final Cut. And I had a couple of people from different schools call me up and say, "Yeah, we'd like to use it privately." And I was like, "Cool." So I was teaching them. And then I ran into a producer that was in the business of producing documentaries. And he asked me to edit his documentary. So I started editing it, but I realized he didn't really have a skill set when it came to kind of directing and telling me how to put it together. You know, I had to take on the hat of longer being more than an editor.
Right.
And at that point, he loved that so much that he said, "Look, I got this reality TV show project coming up, and if you're interested, and I would like to, you know, have you come in and, you know, help be a producer and an editor on it." And I was like, "Really?" That would be cool. So
now, what year was that when you got asked to do the reality show?
That was, oh man, you know, all this years kind of running together with me. But I'm thinking it was like 2000, maybe 2005, wow. 2006, something
see,
like that.
See, that to me is amazing. I mean, I've been in this business for 30 years. Okay, so you're saying in 2001, you picked up iMovie and started screwing around with it. And 5 years later, you're making a reality TV show.
That is correct.
So you fall squarely into the category of people that I hate.
Well, I think there was a lot of luck on my side for sure, and And I don't know. I never take no for an answer in certain respects. And I always like kind of, I don't know, just, I just push, you know, and I guess my sales pitch kind of just, I just tried to use every tool that I had around me to kind of convince people that I have the skill set to really pull things off. And, but I think luck has a lot to do with it.
Well, there may be luck, confidence is an important aspect to that. But clearly performance, but clearly performance is part of it too. I mean, they always say about like the children of famous people, you know, their name gets them in the door, but their skill is what gets them the second job, you know? You know, and so it doesn't matter if you are, you know, Bruce Willis's kid. If you're a lousy actor, you're a lousy actor.
True.
Right? And so, sure. And yes, I might, having the name Willis may get you, and I'm not making any comments about Rumor Willis or whatever his kids' names are. But if, you know, having that name might get you in the door, like, oh, fine, send him in, I'll talk to him. You know, Bruce is an okay guy, whatever. But if you can't do it, you know, you're not going to get the job. You're probably not going to get the job.
Yeah. You know, I have a funny story about Bruce Willis, by the way.
Oh, let's hear it. After I cut my hair last weekend, everybody said I look like Bruce Willis.
Is that right?
Oh, I do not look like Bruce Willis.
Yeah, we were playing a gig. I was playing with my dad's band at the time, a band called War. They've had a few hits along the way. Lowrider, Cisco Kid, Why Can't We Be Friends, various hits.
Yeah, we've heard those songs. Those are huge, dude. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
We got this deal where somebody wanted to have us perform at their location up in Haley, Idaho.
And, okay.
And we thought, well, okay, that's kind of cool. So, but it was just one individual that really had an interest in working with us. But we didn't realize that until we actually got there. We walk in. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
That's nice, man. I love that song.
Yeah, we've heard of your dad, okay.
Yes, Dad on Drums. Love that song, Dad on Drums. So we went there, and this guy walks in with a beanie, and he introduced himself, said, I want to play with you guys, man. One of my favorite songs is Gypsy Man, and I've always wanted to play that on stage with you. So he basically, that was Bruce Willis. He hired the band for his little town in Haley, Idaho.
Oh,
he had one side of the town, he had like a hotel and a few other things that were completely out of place, because it's like at least at the time I was there, it was like almost like a very small ghostly type of town. And on the other side, Demi Moore had all of her doll houses and dolls and stuff sitting in there. It was really very interesting location that they picked. But Bruce, he said that he broke his leg filming a show not too far from there, and he was laid up in that town. He said it was a shoot 'em up town, and he fell in love with it. And,
interesting. And
the rest is history. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I do know that, like, for example, I actually know of somebody who, without giving away any details, they have a business in California. They own the business in California. At least a lion's share of it. They work in California most of the time, but recently they purchased a home in Washington State, and apparently all they have to do is live 51%, stay there 51% of the time, and they can call Washington State their primary residence, and there is no income tax in Washington State. So I don't know if Idaho has anything like that, but that may have been part of the draw to stuff like that.
Oh, gotcha.
Who knows? I mean, I'm not making any judgments on anybody who's trying to avoid paying taxes at all.
Well, it wouldn't have been a place necessarily I would have personally picked, although it was great. I enjoyed the people there. It was fun. Had a great time, but I'm a city boy at heart.
Did your dad, and I think you said your dad played drums for War?
Yes, he's the founder of the band. It started in his grandmother's, or my grandmother's garage, his mother's garage.
That's awesome.
He actually, he still plays. He's still a professional drummer. He still plays with four of the original members. They've been together since they were 16 years old.
That's awesome.
And
Okay, so let's get back onto the video track. So you went to Europe, you did a few gigs, you did the a couple of commercials, you came back to the States, mm-hmm. you did some Final Cut teaching. Now were you at like a certified trainer, or were you faking it like I do?
Fake it. I just picked up the books, opened up the and read cover to cover. I found out my dad taught me a long time ago, if you want to hide something, put it in a book.
That's awesome.
You know what I mean? So the whole thing is that people, if they just read the books. I would have friends of mine that were using the same product, and they would say, "How did you know how to do that?" And I was like, "I just read it. Maybe you skipped that chapter or something." But yeah, you just read it, and it gives you all the information you need.
I have been schooled on that many, many times over the years. I'll give you an example. I remember the first time somebody showed me, and this would be about 14 years ago, it'd be about 2001, something like that. And somebody showed me the paste attributes in Final Cut Classic, the old Final Cut. And I was like, oh, this is going to save so much time. It's like, oh my goodness.
Golden nugget.
Oh, here we got another musical interlude.
That's my dad singing that part, actually.
Is it? That's awesome.
And if you watch that video, I'm actually in it as a kid.
Oh, really? That's awesome. Very cool, too. I feel like such the DJ playing little samples out of iTunes here. Okay, so Final Cut 10 comes out. What was your first reaction to it then?
You know what? For me, again, you know, I hate to go back to that individual thing, but for me, since I generally didn't work in team situations, I didn't have that feeling that everybody else had with regards to saying, "Oh man, they ruined it. You know, we can't do this. We're going to cross over, you know, this whole thing." I was like, "Nah, man, this is, of course there was a little couple of bugs here and there, but you know, every product has that when it first comes out, especially when it, you know, comes, the first version of it. But for me, I enjoyed it, and I wanted to dive right in, and I didn't go back to 9. I stayed in 10.
Yeah, it's interesting that you call it the first version of it, because that was people's biggest complaints in the beginning, that it was not supposed to be the first version of something. It's supposed mm-hmm. to be Final Cut 8 or 10 or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
So you were giving it the benefit of the doubt, going, yeah, it's going to be okay.
You know, absolutely.
Look at this.
Well, it worked. I mean, I got into it, and I saw that it was capable of doing, and was able to apply it. So, you know, why not? All right. I mean, it worked. It worked well. I already enjoyed the efforts of what Final Cut was able to do, and I knew that they would not completely destroy that. Plug-in situations that had to kind of grow into it at a later time. But and I think that was also a big complaint, as you said, a lot of the being able to connect a lot of the plug-ins that you had originally had into it.
Yeah, as it has turned out, the plugin community for Final Cut 10 is, I believe, way stronger and more robust than it ever was for Final Cut 7. The very fact that they have created their own plugin generation tool, and then you take things like, you know, take companies like FX Factory, who, you know, have this. I mean, and I will say, I am a huge fan of FX Factory. And so I mention them a lot. There's a lot of people that make plugins, not the least of which would be like Mark Spencer from Ripple Training. You know, he's got some great plugins, which I use all the time. I would be lost without the plugin, with the Callouts plugin that Mark Spencer created. I use that in the corporate videos that I use all the time, you know, multiple times a week. But as it's turned out, the plugin community, I think, is way stronger for Final Cut 10.
I think you're right about that.
They're different, but it's more robust. And not to mention guys like Alex Gollner, my friend Alex in London, who has this huge collection of plugins on his website that he gives away for free.
I'm gonna have to write that name down.
Oh, really? You don't know Alex? Alex?
No.
Alex4D.com. So here's one I'm gonna tell you about, and I talk about this like it seems like every other show. Maybe every show. There's a plugin on Alex's website called Grow Shrink. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you take this thing and you drop it onto a photo or a video clip or whatever. And by default, it will do a perfect little 5% grow, you know, just like a simplified version of a Ken Burns effect, but it's automatic. You just go, boom, drop it on, copy and paste that attribute across a bunch of clips and you're done.
Wow.
And seriously, I use Grow Shrink every single day. Even on just like a video shot where like it's just a wee bit too static, boom, throw that on. All of a sudden there's a nice little push, you know, it's amazing.
Wow. Yeah. I need to get my hands on that. I'm actually going to have to pick your brain.
Alex 4D is a huge resource and a great guy, wicked smart. He's been on this show 3 or 4 times. If nothing else, go back and listen to the episodes he's been on. He's a great guy.
I will for sure. My goodness. So much knowledge. So many people have in this field. It's just amazing to me. I enjoy learning, but I enjoy listening. I'm sitting up here wanting to listen to you rather than say anything.
Well, there's 115 hours of me, so you can listen to those. Today we're talking about you, though. So can I ask you, Ray, do you mind talking about the reality show that you did work on? What was it?
It was a reality show called it was called Hottest Mom in America. I don't know how well it did. I left back obviously to Europe again after I had some money in my pocket and was able to bounce. But it was basically in 7 or 8 different cities across the nation, and we basically took women that were moms. And we wanted to put them on a pedestal as a, you know, you would think, I know the first thing comes into mind is probably the term MILF.
Yep.
But we actually tried to make it into something more authentic, like a mom multitasking and the things that they do in life and still are able to look good and feel good. So Right. That was the purpose of the show.
Company Chris, now I'm looking at Hottest Mom in America on IMDb, mm-hmm. and I gotta say, man, I think you got gypped out of a credit here. Cast, I don't see. Oh, full cast. I don't see the crew. Yeah, they got to get on that thing.
Yeah, they probably should. Definitely.
So it looks like you did one season in 2007. So it wasn't Dancing with the Stars, but still, how cool to be able to get a whole series like that.
Yeah, I got really lucky to be able to at least get on it. And also I got a chance to work with someone that became my mentor in that process. And that's the gentleman that was the what was his role? He was the producer for the first Survivor. And you know what? I'm saying it in my head. His name is dropping out of my mind right now. He's going to kill me. Kill me. Oh man, it'll come to me. But he was the first producer of Survivor, and he won many awards for it and that whole nine, director and producer. Okay. And I got a chance to work with him on this project. It was awesome.
Those kind of contacts, and I would agree, there are certain jobs in your career where the actual task at hand isn't the takeaway. It is those relationships and those bonds that you create with people. And if not that you're going to work with them again, but it's what you learn from them.
Absolutely. What you learn, what they're and they bring something to the table that that you can't replace. You can't find that anywhere. You know, you can't it's just one of those bonds that you really need to respect and learn as much as you can. I mean, just be a sponge. Just listen. Don't say anything. Get their coffee. Do whatever is necessary to get them to like you more and more and more.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I think that, you know, that's part of the impetus behind this podcast is the fact that when you sit down with people that know the industry and you just listen, you can soak up so much stuff, you know. And I get comments from people all the time going, "Oh, wow, I didn't know that. I learned that," you know. And it's great to be able to share it, but to be honest, Ray, I learned stuff on every single episode of doing this. So your episode 116, I've learned at least 116 things over the years, last year and a half, whatever, doing the show. And it's, you know, I cherish those little you know, nuggets of knowledge. And it's what makes you grow. It's what makes you advance. So let's talk about to get back to this working solo thing. So you tend to work solo in the projects that you work on?
Generally, it started way back again, being in the music. I was 13. I played 7 different instruments, something like that. And I was really tired of trying to rely on people to make gigs, you know, or make studio set sessions or what have you. And when I realized that my Mac could do all of these things with instruments around it and be able to record into my Mac and that sort of thing using Logic or some other softwares, it changed me. I thought, okay, I don't need anyone anymore. I don't have to depend on anyone anymore. Not to say that I don't like that. I do enjoy collaboration for sure. But having to depend, like if something really needs to get done, if I can't have anybody else around, I like to know I can get it done myself. So with Final Cut, it was or just video editing or shooting or producing projects of that nature. That was my thing, was focusing on bringing good talent around me, have them work with me. But then if I needed to fill in the gap, I could do that.
Right. Gotcha. So, and I will say that, you know, there is that aspect to post-production. And again, you know, I don't know, we haven't spoken too much, but, you know, my thing is I'm an editor. That's all I do. You know, I don't shoot. I direct on occasion. But more and more, my schedule is tied up sitting at an edit desk. And so it actually precludes me from getting involved in a lot of directing. And there's certain things that I'm cutting where I just like, I wish I'd been on set.
Right, exactly. You know?
It's like, why do we not have that reversal?
Exactly.
But so you like the fact that quite often you're shooting and cutting you've shot.
Well, not much now. Just I definitely enjoy bringing the talent in and having them basically do the process. I think just knowing that I've done all of that, it's giving me an insight to be able to produce things and not feel, you know, silly about it or not have an understanding about it. If somebody talks about cameras and talking about techniques and stuff, I can help with that. I can be a part of that. I can be I feel confident enough to know that I can get the shots that are necessary. If they cannot, I can kind of explain that out. Editing purposes, same thing. If I have an editor, where I'm working with an editor, we can go through the process. I know I can help with that process or be insightful and explain things in the terms that he would understand or she would understand. Right. And also, you know, every process down the line, even encoding and getting things to whatever medium that it needs to be distributed at. All of these things, I think, play an important role in making sure the product is, for me, the cheapest possible way to get it done, but top level, make it look great, you know. And I think that's what I'm capable of. I wanted to be able to bring to the table, even like you were saying, even the music side of it. That was another part of it. You know, how is the body of music going to sound? When what sound effects are we going to use to kind of emphasize certain points in the video? Type of music, the licensing aspects of those music. I mean, what are we going to be using? How do we license that? If it doesn't need to be licensed, you know, all these fat assets I wanted to know anything and everything about. And during the process of being in the business, as long as I have on the audio side of things and then into the visual side of things, I think it's allowed me that being able to do that.
Right. One more music cut while we're here.
that's the finale, baby.
you can't. You. It's great. It's how cool to say, yeah, that's my dad. That's my dad.
It's, you know, what's wild is that when I go to, like, Hungary, for instance, it's not a place, a destination for many people, especially from North America. And I go into a little small venue, little small town, totally removed from anywhere and everywhere, and I hear one of my dad's songs come on.
That's classic.
It's crazy. I mean, it really is. I say, I just can't get away from them.
You know, I was working once in Amsterdam, and I was doing a convention there, and I was getting ready in the bathroom in the morning, and I'd left the TV on, and I'd gotten out of the shower, and all of a sudden I went, "What's that voice?" And I looked around the corner, and it was the host of a show that I directed back in those days. I was still directing it. Back in the States, that I didn't realize was playing also, you know, all over Europe. And I was like, oh, that's my boss, because he's the executive producer and the host of the show.
Oh, wow.
it was one of the shows that I had directed, and it was on the hotel television. It kind of caught me by surprise. I was like, oh, that's weird.
That's cool. Yeah,
kind of a small world.
It is.
Okay, so working solo, mm-hmm. and being immersed in all of the various aspects and bits and bobs of the industry, you know, directing and shooting and cutting and music and, like you said, even down to compression and deliverables. Now, I have a question for you, and this gets to one of the topics that comes up quite a bit on the show. Do you? I'm assuming, because we all get free updates, that you're using the most recent version, 10.1.4, of the software as of April 4th, 2015. Correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So, how do you do any customization of the library preferences when you work?
You know, I do to a point. I did do some customization for them to a point, but I generally I'm kind of a, I don't know, I don't want to say lazy at it, but because I'm constantly wearing so many hats, I generally find myself not doing that,
right.
When I actually should. Because it would save me time.
Well,
definitely.
Maybe. Honestly, I had this discussion with a producer the other day, and they're like, so, and what I'm alluding to here is the age old topic, if you will, at least on this show, of whether or not you are importing your media into the library or you're opting to use the leave in place command. And then, of course, now since 10.1.2, we also have the ability of designating a library storage location that is outside the actual library file, and that's mm-hmm. in the library preferences panel, or I always forget what it's called over there, the far right hand corner, command 4. Great. I know the keyboard shortcut for it, but I don't know what it's called. And so I was talking with a producer, and he said, well why wouldn't you keep the stuff, you know, because so, like, you know, if you do not opt to leave in place, you're immediately, and you've copied your camera data mm-hmm. off of your card onto your hard drive, and then you do import into library, you're immediately going to end up with two copies of your media,
right?
Which just all it really does for you at this point is make your hard drive fill up twice as fast. And so, you know, he was asking me, why would you? And I said, why would you import into the library? And I said to him, I said that there is a certain comfort zone if you are passing stuff around to other mm-hmm. people. Sometimes it is comfortable to know that all I have to do is take this one file, this library file called My Great Video, mm-hmm. and give it to somebody. Now, it might be a very big file. Mm-hmm. You know, it might be tens or hundreds of gigabytes, depending on the size and length and nature of the project. But mm-hmm. There is a certain comfort in that if you don't have a legitimate workflow where mm-hmm. you are accustomed to keeping all of your bits and bobs and pieces gathered together in what we do here at our office is a specific job folder. So every single piece of media or stuff that goes mm-hmm. into a piece lives in that job folder in one subfolder or another. Mm-hmm. I was just curious how you worked.
One of the things that came up to my in my mind when you were talking about this, just backup, really. I worked on a project before I left Budapest that was for Pernod Ricard, the alcohol company that I guess they put out Bacardi and a few other alcohols. They're out of France, but they came to Budapest for some sort of awards show or something, and I got in charge of shooting that whole process. And the guys that were shooting it for me, people I had not worked with, some of them I had not worked with at all, I was really concerned about backing things up. And I know that they were giving me the mediums from their camera, and I would, we'd drop it into Final Cut, import it, and then I would be focused on having an internal version of it and also wanting to have some level of external version of it as well. So maybe with that that feature, I would be thinking in terms of just having a second copy at any given time at the same time, so to speak.
Yeah, as long as you actually have, as long as that extra copy is actually on a second hard drive.
External, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, which generally was the case for me. We always had an external sitting next to it, one of those little C drives that, Thunderbolt through and have that. I generally generally editing off of externals primarily, but from a laptop, because I wanted to quickly get the things done necessary and be able to do it anywhere. Being that I travel so much, the laptop thing was I would have two laptops over. I would love a Mac Pro. Definitely. I'm sure you probably have a few of them sitting there for yourself. Yeah, there.
We have one.
That's great. I mean, I think I'm afraid to even get on one of those because I'm afraid that I'll like it so much that it'll tether me to a desk for the rest of my life after that point.
Well, you could always carry around a big, giant battery.
I can try that. I know some guys, they were having these big cases and they would drop. Well, now you don't need a big case. I'm thinking of the towers that they had before, but now they have the
I used to travel in the 90s with nearly 300 pounds of gear.
Musician stuff there.
Yeah, basically, yeah. I mean, I travel with glass CRTs. I travel with a Mac tower. I traveled with a 12x12 Wacom stylus tablet, custom cases for everything. It was crazy town. The fact that you can do so much on a MacBook Pro or even an iPad using iMovie, I think that there is, in the next few years, we're going to see either Final Cut Pro for the iOS or we're going to see the Mac OS devolve, I believe, into being much more like the iOS. Or the third option is that we will see iMovie open up and release more of the features of Final Cut Pro. I mentioned Alex Gollner earlier. Alex is famous for opening up the package contents of various applications and sniffing around in the code behind it, and he finds elements and whatnot. And he was one of the first people to say, XML is coming for Final Cut in 10.0 because he could see the code was in there to implement it. It just wasn't turned on. And so through his, nerd sleuthing, if you will, he's been able to predict a lot of various features coming out for Final Cut. And one of the things that he has done on multiple occasions is looked at the code inside iMovie and said, oh, because the iMovie tends to get released a little bit before Final Cut. Mm-hmm. And he looks at it and he goes, oh, look what's coming in Final Cut. And sure enough, 3 to 6 months later, features get released. And he predicted it because those features are alluded to inside the code of iMovie.
He knows how to look under the hood and see that.
He's wicked smart. Hey, totally off topic. I've just been reading along in the Meerkat stream, and people have been mentioning the Meerpod, which is, I don't think it's a real product yet. Maybe it is, but it's a little tiny iPod for Meercasting.
Yes, I have seen a couple of them there. I think the...
This one has a bottle opener. In one of its legs. It's mirrorpod.com, and they've actually tooled the thing to mimic a bottle opener. Look at this. Mirrorpod, mirrpod.com. And first of all, I don't want to support my whole phone by the Thunderbolt jack. I think that's kind of a mistake waiting to happen. Second of all, it doesn't look like it it tilts at all. That's the second problem. But scroll down to the bottom of the page and you can see the built-in bottle opener as part of the Mirrorpod design, which I got to say is clever. And I would almost buy one just because they had the balls to put a bottle opener.
Wait, there's more. That's wild to me. No, this is Yeah, you know, it looks like a render almost. You know, is it a real product?
I don't know. Doesn't it reek of a Kickstarter?
Well, you know, good luck to them. You know, if it works and they're able to.
I was telling so I started this stream 15 minutes before we started chatting. And I was telling everybody, I said, yeah, Ray was really clever. He was using a coffee mug for an iPhone stand last night. I was like, that's really smart.
I'm showing my Meerkat people as well. I just turned it on and showing them the coffee cup that I was using for that. So, yeah.
Well, I was I'm going to show my audience here, and this makes for really horrible radio. So this is the little clampy thing that I bought. Which is, it's made by a company called, let's see if I can get the lighting right. I cannot. There it is. Archon, Arkon. And it is a ball joint and a spring clip to grab the phone. And then it has a little thing that you can attach to any tripod that you need. So, and I'm using a little Joby Flexi thing that I can mount like on the center console in my car, because I've been doing a lot of mirror casting, tisk tisk, as I drive.
How do you enjoy it? Do you enjoy? I'm going to be the interviewer.
You know what? This is an interesting thing. So let's say if all you care about is Final Cut Pro, this show might be over. Ray likes Final Cut Pro. I like Final Cut Pro. Two users, thumbs up.
Love it.
So what I want to ask about though is, what do you think Meerkat is? Describe Meerkat to somebody who's never heard of it.
Meerkat to me is a portable way to report.
Okay.
I assume if you get the image in your mind about a news crew,
mm-hmm.
With a truck,
yep,
and a big antenna popped up trying to transmit their information to the receiver. Microwave. And they're trying to do live shows, like yep. just bouncing around, right? This is something where you can do exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing. You can pull it out of your pocket, you can turn it on right away, and you can begin the process of reporting news or reporting information on the fly immediately, live, no cuts, no edits, truth be told. That's how I envision people using it. I'm thinking of people that go into communities and decide, you know what, this community, the businesses in this community need a little help in selling their business and their products and services. So one day someone walks into a coffee shop and interviews them for an hour. The next day, they walk into a donut shop and interviews them for a while. Another place, they might do dry cleaning, and they interview them for a little time, asking for their product and services. And it's live, and it's immediately. It's like building it on the backbone of Twitter, to me, was the smartest thing they could have ever done.
So, agreed. Somebody on Twitter is saying, Meerkat needs to do something for us Android users. Maybe. Yeah, they probably will.
They will, surely.
You know, I was sitting down with Steve, one of the guys that works here with me at Slice Editorial, where I work in Oakland. And he said, you know, he asked the age-old question, well, what is it? And I said, you know what? I don't know if we know what it is yet. It is technology without a home, possibly. But I think time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody had like said to Mark Andreessen 24 years ago, what the hell is this web thing you're working on? He'd go, I don't know, but I think it's going to be big, you know? And look at all the commerce and socializing and stuff that happens via the web today. So I think that Meerkat, or the concept of personal broadcasting is what I call it, personal social broadcasting, personal social broadcasting with live interaction, immediate feedback as to whether or not you're entertaining or not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we know what it's going to be. I think I'm seeing a few things that are quite interesting. Not the least of which, I think the most interesting thing that I have seen on Meerkat is not Bad Beef, which is a guy who looks like he needs some beef, and he just sits in his Barca lounger in his parents' bedroom, living room, with an iPad over his shoulder saying, ask me anything. And it's like, what the hell are you doing? And he's on for hours at a day. And he's like one of the top five or six Meerkasters in the leaderboard. And I don't think it is, what's her name, Nora Segura, who just drinks tequila into the night in her bikini top and rambles on, you know, incessantly saying absolutely nothing for hours on end. And yes, I've watched her.
I was going to say, what's her name again?
Yeah. But I think one of the most interesting, and this is, you know, getting into broadcasting a little bit, although not post-production, because everything you do on Meerkat is live. But I think one of the most interesting thing is a thing called, yes, Nick, one of the listeners is saying almost immediate. It's like 20-second delay. It is. I think one of the most interesting things is a feed called Arsenic Magazine. Now, I don't know if you've come across them or not.
I haven't.
So Arsenic Magazine is a model agency in LA, and they are using a term or a technique that I actually asked one of their models. So what will happen is periodically throughout the day, Arsenic Magazine will come up in your stream and you go, oh, let's see that girl from Arsenic, and you click it and it's a new face and it's a new person, but it's a model at a shoot or in her apartment or at a party or in a jacuzzi or at a, you know, an event. And they are just interacting with, you know, 10, 20, 40, 50, 60, 80 people that log in to see what's going on. So, but it's a different person every time. And I asked one of the girls last night, I said, does Arsenic just say, use our feed? Do they just assign their feed to different models all the time? Because I've seen models on there from Hollywood to San Diego. And she responded back. She goes, yes, it's called a takeover. And that's like, oh, interesting. Now, here is a business model. So if you want people to know about Arsenic Magazine, now maybe you don't know, you don't know what they are, but if you just want people to know about you by roping in various I'll call them social celebrities, okay, or celebutards, if you will.
Right.
But by roping in various celebutards and say, here is my login, and represent me for 30 minutes or an hour, or go to this event. Like you could, so let's say, for example, I live in outside of San Francisco. Let's say I wanted to make a Meerkat stream called SF Nights. So it's like, if I want to know what to do in San Francisco, I would log on and check out SF Nights. And then what you do is you get people or maybe just businesses and you say, hey, look, my Meerkat stream typically gets 100 people watching it. I will give you my feed and let you do a takeover from your bar or nightclub or disco or event. And for the hour that you are running it, you can be saying, hey, come down to our event, you know, for the next 60 minutes cover is only $4 instead of 10 and whatever. So here's a business model all of a sudden where you do a series of takeovers throughout an evening, and all of a sudden there are people that are maybe at home or maybe at another event going, right, oh, hey, this place looks like it's hopping. Let's hop in our Uber car or Lyft car and go over there.
Wow, man.
Business model right there.
Man, you're giving away the prize, man. Are you kidding me?
Whatever. I mean, I've given away more than $1 million idea in my life.
That is an awesome idea. You know, I just locked down the name. You know, I'm a big .com. I used to own like 100,000 domain names back in the day, and I did crazy stuff. Yeah, that's a whole nother story. But I bought the name mirrorlife.com.
Now, I'm going to tell you why I don't like that. And it only has to do with this Nora Segura woman, who is currently, I think, number two in the Meerkat leaderboard. So when she drinks too much tequila in her bikini in her kitchen while she continually cooks and eats, she keeps saying the phrase, for life. For life. Yes, you are my fans for life. I am famous for life, for life, for life. It's like, oh, shut up. So if you can get your $7.95 back from GoDaddy for Mirror Life, you might want to rethink that one. But no, I think that there is I think that there are ways that Meerkat can become something, but I think that clearly we don't know what it is yet.
Yeah.
And then I'll ask you the obligatory question: why do you prefer Meerkat over Periscope?
The first thing that comes to my mind: I was using Meerkat first.
Yep.
I've promised myself that I would use Periscope this weekend because I don't plan on doing any feeds today or tomorrow. I'll do it on Monday. So I figured it would be a good time to at least give them at least a chance to convince me that it's a good product. Not saying that I'll move over,
right,
but that it's a good product. So.
Well, I'm going to tell you the one reason right away that it doesn't work for you. Okay? I'm going to tell you, Ray, I very much enjoyed listening to you last night. Otherwise, I wouldn't have asked you to come and be on this show.
Thank you very much.
So
that's very kind.
It was, and you are a very kind person, and it was pleasurable to listen to you go through your questions that were coming in and give each and every one of them their just due. Oh, and by the way, there was one of my messages where I said, I have a, and I typed P-O in capitals, and you were like, I don't know what that means. And I'm like, yeah, my damn keyboard locked up and it accidentally sent.
I remember that.
Because I was trying to type, I have a podcast called FCPX Grill, and would you like to come and be on it sometime? But it accidentally sent after I have a PO.
I was thinking post office box,
and you're like, and you're like staring at it, and you're like, what is wrong with you? I have no idea what that means. You poor little white boy. So anyway, I want to say what I was going to say about Periscope. So when people chat you in Periscope, it only remains on screen for about 5 seconds and then it dissolves away.
Oh yeah, that's great.
And so what you do of taking on comments and questions in a one-on-one individual way,
right,
you could not do on Periscope.
Yes.
And I think that the persistent chat, not only is it persistent, but with the 1.2 update from last night, you can scroll back. And if somebody chats something new, it doesn't jump down to the end of the chat again. It leaves
Excellent.
It where it is. So you can really concentrate on what people are, not what they are saying, but what they have said.
Yes, you 20 know, seconds ago.
Well, no, more than that, because what I'm saying is you can scroll backwards through the chat, which you cannot do on Periscope.
Gotcha.
So anyway, you know, I think this topic is really interesting, and I was thinking about it this morning after you and I set the time to meet today, and I was thinking, wow, maybe this might be a whole nother podcast. You know, like I could see doing a podcast about Meerkat. but I don't know that it would last for very long. There might be 10 episodes and then be in and out and done. But and I don't know that the Periscope community is more about what is happening right now, not I gotta go download this thing and then I'm gonna listen to it and it's gonna be from a week ago. You know?
Well, I think that has value. If people want to listen to podcasts or of that nature and want to subscribe to something and listen to it at their leisure, that's one side of it. But, you know, being that it's piggybacked on Twitter and people actually using Twitter, at least the way I use it, getting information immediately.
Right.
I think that it has legs to stand on. I mean, that's the next. I see, you know, reality TV is trying to take that approach as well. Let's make this live. And I think that everything is kind of moving in that direction where, to give more of a credibility to the product itself, making things right instantaneous, right there. Practice your craft, make sure you can talk well in front of the camera and stuff, because everything is going to be live. And I think that works. I think we're onto something here. I think Meerkat is definitely onto something when it comes to that. I'm surprised that, Ustream is a company that I really thought was going to kind of go that direction with it. And I think they've tried on many occasions. They're a Hungarian-based company. They're a Hungarian-based company.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, they're a Hungarian company, but I guess they're international now. I thought they would do it, but your cat pulled it off.
Yeah, it's been very interesting. Ray, I'm going to let you go. If people want to follow you on the web or Twitter or Meerkat, how do they find you on the internets?
Thank you for asking. Well, website itself is Ray Brown, my name, .me, RayBrown.me. My Twitter name is RayBrown_me. And that's it. Those two things will get to me, no problem.
And of course, if you want to follow Ray on Meerkat, you can also, once you find him through his same Twitter name, you can hit the follow button. And that way you will actually be notified as soon as he logs on. Also, have you scheduled your next event?
I haven't scheduled yet because they don't allow scheduling for
more than 24 hours in advance, right?
Exactly. So my next event will actually be on Monday at 8 p.m.
Very cool. Well, this will be out by then. This show will come out to Sunday evening here in the States, worldwide, of course. And then, so if you're listening to this Monday morning on your commute home, you can catch Ray Brown on Meerkat, at 8 p.m. Pacific time. Ray, let's keep in touch. I've very much enjoyed chatting with you. And maybe we need to do a podcast all about Meerkat. Who knows?
Absolutely. And I got the perfect title for it. No. Life. What is she saying again? Something about mere life.
For life. Yeah. So, yeah.
Chris, thank you very much. You're a stellar man. I appreciate you allowing me to.
All right.
Be a part of this.
And no problem, Ray. We'll keep in touch. Take care.
Take care.
All right. So what do you think? What did you think of my $1 million idea at the end there? Do you think that's a go or no go? Deal or no deal? I think there's something there. Somebody's going to do it, and they're going to have to thank me for it. Maybe they'll just buy me a little villa in the south of France. Who knows? I want to thank everybody for listening. You have no idea what you all mean to me. It is a pleasure to hear comments from you. I'm looking forward to seeing some of you face-to-face at NAB next week. And please, regardless of how many times you've tweeted me or meerkatted me or interacted with me in any number of ways, if you see me, walk up to me and say, "Hi, I am Chris Fenwick. My hashtag is at Chris," or my handle is at Chris Fenwick, because I don't always connect the faces and stuff, and I don't want another Scott Simmons incident like he ambushed me last year at the Post Chat meetup. Sunday night I'll be at the Post Chat meetup. Monday night I'm going to FCPX Gurus. There's something else Monday night. Tuesday night there's something. And then also late Tuesday night at 11:59 p.m., we're going to go to the DCC meetup at the Cosmopolitan Pool Table. Meet us there, 11:59 p.m., because we didn't know if midnight was 12 a.m. or p.m. So 11:59 p.m., we will see you there. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week from NAB with another episode of The Grill. Later. And stop.